I hate that you're good at this now.
Well, it's just like the number of games. So, and it doesn't change like the podcast does because we don't do this on off weeks.
Right.
So I got it right. Michigan enters a titanic battle of undefeateds against Michigan State for only the first time since 1829.
Something like that. I forgot to look up when the last time is.
Everybody is betting on this game.
Yeah, they're betting against us.
All of the money in the state of Michigan is going on Michigan State, and then like a slight majority of it outside the state of Michigan is going on Michigan. So that says something about something. I don't know what.
Well, my paranoid self thinks it's about the gamblers knowing something, of course. So that's I've been, you know, scanning message boards and whatnot for anybody who's injured or, you know, COVID at Michigan or some massive explosion or
never,
radiation.
Never attribute the malice what can be ascribed to Michigan fan pessimism and Michigan State fans' insane over-optimism. That's what I say.
Very well. Do you have a do you have any way to segue that weirdly to our sponsors? Because I would like to do that.
Seth should probably read the sponsors now.
So MCO Radio is sponsored by Underground Printing, who makes this wonderful shirt, which I have now. So you can have. You'll get your corn shirt eventually, Brian.
I got it.
Oh, you did? Excellent. Excellent. Well, Underground Printing has three retail locations in Ann Arbor. They offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or mgoblogstore.com. I also want to thank our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Prentice 4M, and Signal Wire, which we are using right now.
All right, so Michigan State, let's start off by talking about their offense, and that starts off with Kenneth Walker, a Wake Forest transfer who is inexplicably leading the country in rushing right now. Why?
Yeah, well, first off, if Kenneth Walker III wasn't really good, you could make a fascinating Ewing theory case because he leaves Wake, and now Wake is having a really good season too. So, interesting in that way. But Kenneth Walker III is a great player, no question about that. He breaks tackles. He gets an insane amount of yards after contact. I think the stat entering this week was 4.5. And his ability to change speed, stop on a dime, all that sort of stuff, really, really impressive. I mean, there's obviously, if you follow Twitter, there's been plenty of debates about Corum versus KW3 over the past several weeks. I think that's a waste of time because both are great players, and Walker is no question a phenomenal, phenomenal running back. And I think he is mostly the reason why Michigan State has been a decent running offense this year. I don't think that offensive line is particularly great, but Walker makes guys miss. And so the key for Michigan is going to be, do you get the first hit on him at the line of scrimmage, 2 yards in the backfield, or 5 yards past the line of scrimmage? That'll be the difference, because he's going to make a tackler miss, and he's going to drag bodies on his back for several yards. It all comes down to where do you first make contact, and that will probably determine the component of the rush offense versus rush defense for this side of the ball.
Yeah, so this is a very strange assortment of games. So they annihilate Northwestern. They annihilate Youngstown State. They do pretty well against Miami. I'd say very well against Miami. They do very well against Western Kentucky. They annihilate Rutgers. So all of those games, they're at like at least 4.5 yards a carry, and several of them, they're above 6. And against Nebraska and Indiana, they get held under 3 yards a carry, and that's not like a sack artifact because Walker was shut down. And so what are the differences between those two games and then the other four?
Well, I think first and foremost, Indiana and Nebraska have pretty good front sevens, or at least respectable front sevens. And, Michael McFadden for Indiana is a great player, was a huge part of their success in stopping the run in that game. But also, Northwestern can't tackle at all. Miami can't tackle at all. And so some of these games that Walker's ripped open were teams that struggled to tackle. And if you can't tackle, you're in big-time trouble against Kenneth Walker III. But the big story about the Indiana-Nebraska game was that the defensive lines of those two teams decisively won the battle at the line of scrimmage, where you had Michigan State this season, a lot of optimism about how they've improved the offensive line. I think it's improved, no question. But there's a lot of reason to think they've been kind of pushing around lesser teams, and that when they face a half-decent front seven, it hasn't gone very well, because their strategy for the offensive line this year is nine guys, and they just rotate. It's just a revolving door, five on, five off, and it's helped to keep them fresh. It's helped to keep minimize the matchups that they're weak against. The problem is, at its core, outside of Jarrett Horst, the left tackle who transferred from Arkansas State, these are the same guys that got caved in for three straight years in the late D'Antonio years plus last season. They've improved to some extent, but you don't go from a disaster to first team all Big Ten in one offseason. And there are still limitations within those players. And so we saw Nebraska just bully them at the line of scrimmage. So
That's one of the strangest things I've ever seen from an offensive line. Like, there were Illinois offensive lines like 5 to 8 years ago that didn't have like a left and a right. They had a field and a boundary.
We did that in high school.
I thought that was crazy. And now it's like, yeah, there was nine of us. We're rotating our OL because it just feels like if you have nine offensive linemen, you don't have five. But so far, it's actually working for them.
I mean, that's the thing teams did in the 70s, but, you know, with Michigan State, I don't think they just don't... They've got seniors that I think they feel like they have to play because they're seniors and they've been starting forever, and then they have guys who I think are better. Like, I think that C-Mac is better than Matt Allen. You wanted me to sign both of them on the chart. Kevin Jarvis, they moved him inside to guard, but he's always been, you know, terrible. A.J. Arcuri, like, you know, he's never been the player that they pump him up to be. It's just... it's. I think Brian's right. If you have that many guys, then it's just telling that it's saying you don't have a line.
Yeah, and I think that, again, you just watched the tape of the Indiana-Nebraska games. There was no push at all on the average down, unblocked rushers up the middle, particularly the Nebraska game, which I did for FFFF. I mean, the fact that Walker got to 3 yards per carry in that game was all Walker. Mm-hmm. I mean, half the plays he gets 3 yards on, he was hit a yard behind the line of scrimmage and managed to drag some people forward. So that's what it all comes down to, is where do you make first contact with Kenneth Walker III? And if Michigan can do what Indiana and Nebraska did on the ground against Michigan State's offense, that changes the whole passing game. Because if you put them behind the sticks, then they don't have as much room to start taking their deep shots, right? They have to focus on getting the first down as opposed to really stretching the field vertically.
Yeah, we should mention that Thorne does have 28 carries that aren't sacks this year. So he is in the vein of Michigan State quarterbacks pass. Well, when it comes down to a critical third down, or if they just think they can get it, that he will be an option on the ground. So that's something to watch out for. It's not like going up against Adrian Martinez, but there will be a couple of moments where he's got the ball and he's running with it.
Yeah, he's got the Lewerke ability to break, contain and scramble for the first. They draw up the occasional QB run, but it's not a huge part of the game, but it's also not something you can dismiss. I mean, it has to be on the scouting report.
Yeah, meanwhile, Thorne's averaging 9.3 yards an attempt, completing 61% of his passes, 15 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. A little bit better than Rocky Lombardi last year, I think we can say. He's mostly throwing to the same guys he was last year, Jaden Reed and Jalen Naylor. And then they converted Connor Hayward into a tight end, sort of.
More of a fullback, really. They don't have a tight end. They use him out of the, you know, they use him in crossers, like, you know, like Michigan uses all, so it's not that different. But he's not that good of a blocker either. He's more of a receiver.
Good news, whoever that guy was from last year doesn't have a catch. So.
Yeah, it's really just three receivers and then Connor Hayward. Those are the four guys who get targets. It's Naylor, it's Jaden Reed, and Trey Mosley. Mosley is more of the sort of go-over-the-middle type guy for the 15-yard pass, whereas Naylor and Reed are the speedsters. Those are the two guys that are averaging almost 20 yards per reception this season. Both have 60-plus yard catches this season. They're mostly speed guys as opposed to refined receivers, and when you look at a lot of the deep shots that Thorne has hit, it's not like he's fitting the ball in a tight window. A lot of them are 10, 5, 15 yards of separation where the receivers have just toasted the corner. And so they've made life easy on Thorne in that regard because they are two great playmakers, and the speed you have to watch out for.
Five of those are flea flickers.
Yeah, they call a flea flicker basically every week. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's not a terrible idea.
I mean, I wish Michigan called more than one this season. Like, the one seemed to work out pretty well, and it's, we have a, I mean, I get it with that team. Like, Kenneth Walker starts running down at you, you kind of feel like you want to pull everybody down immediately and get your safeties involved. But I'm sure at this point Michigan scouted it.
So how do we feel about the matchup here between the front seven of Michigan and the OL of Michigan State?
That part of the game I feel pretty good about, as long as Seth hasn't been tricking us or something. Like, if as long as the UFR grades for defensive tackles are correct.
We're not facing great offensive lines. So keep, I mean, this one's not one either, but like Northwestern had small guys and they got shoved around again. But they, I mean, they totaled Wisconsin. Wisconsin's not a a standard Wisconsin line, but they're not a bad offensive line. And I mean, basically, I'm at the point now where if they have a good game, I'm starring the two starters because I can't hold it off anymore. They're getting, you know, a plus a point per two plays, which is pretty much star level.
Yeah. Right, so I mean, it, just to add on to that, if those guys are legit and Aiden Hutchinson is Aiden Hutchinson and Ojabo's been coming on as a pass rusher, Michigan should be able to dominate at the line and get pressure on Thorne. It's just a matter of can your coverage hold up this year.
The problem is, just like last year, there's no pass rush that can get to the quarterback before he can just launch a ball downfield. So if he can throw it up there and Naylor and Reed can run past, you know, DJ Turner and Vincent Gray and Jamon Green again, you know, that's every Michigan fan's nightmare, right? I know they don't have Ricky White anymore, but that is every Michigan fan's nightmare, and there's no stopping that. Even no, there's no zone coverage that doesn't...
Because Michigan isn't going to be in press coverage all the time, right? So if you're starting off, mm-hmm. like, you can try to run a fade against off coverage and see if that works for you. It might, but you know, you might have to try to back shoulder.
It did last year. Caught. So like several of those times were off coverage.
I know, but that was a Don Brown defense that didn't know what they were doing in a zone, and also like didn't have the other guy who was supposed to be teaching them what to do on campus.
Right.
So. I feel like if they want to just take deep shots down the sideline, I mean, yeah, that's a little bit of a worry, I guess. But
I mean, one thing I'll also point out is that I think this is less of a chuck and pray offense than it was last season because they have Kenneth Walker III. They've improved on the offensive line. Like, I don't think they're just going to be out there heaving it for heaving its sake. They'll make the shot a few times, especially if it's open. But last year, with the way Lombardi just threw it for throwing its sake because he was going to get killed by Quiddy Pay or Hutchinson, I don't think that's quite the way MSU is walking into this game as a 7-0 team versus 0-1 having lost to Rutgers.
I mean,
they
have not ground anybody down this year. Bill Connolly had an article about it today where he's just like, this team is so weird because they are the epitome of bend don't break on defense. We'll get to that, but they're also, you know, Penn State 2019 on offense where they are all the bomb. And Kenneth Walker is a bomb because people are going to deliver. His line's not going to really keep him clean, and they don't have a lot of guys in. They run out of a spread all the time. They at least have three guys wide. They'll move Hayward out in the slot too and go four wide. So Kenneth Walker is getting people in his face at the line of scrimmage, and then he breaks three tackles and destroys people. So like they're one of the most explosive offenses in the country. And that's all they have. So, I mean, I don't know if that's if that's good news or bad news from a Michigan standpoint, but like that's who Michigan State is. They're going to hit you with big plays. That's how they've gotten all their points so far.
Yeah, they don't go on the Army drive. They don't go on a Wisconsin drive where it's 13 plays, 88 yards in 12 and a half minutes. That's not what they're doing this season. And the last thing I do want to point out here is Peyton Thorne in the Big Ten play has been turnover prone. He's averaging a pick a game in the Big Ten, and PFF's marked him up for, I don't remember the exact number, but it was somewhere between 5 and 7 additional turnover-worthy plays this season. Indiana turned him over twice with a pair of interceptions. So there may be some room for Michigan to cause havoc, especially if they're getting pressure. And, you know, that'll be something to watch.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about the Michigan State defense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced, co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage it with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas, and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey, didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, to make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue. Welcome back to Amgo Radio 7.7. We are broadcasting this live via Signal Wire, and Seth gave me this ad read in all caps. So,
Signal Wire, real-time video and technology allows you to create interactive video experiences. Cities that don't have NRA politics have been using it for virtual town halls, and musicians have been using it for fully interactive virtual concerts. Signal Wire was started by original geek of software-defined telecom technology. They're Michigan fans, and they'll be the ones personally supporting you. Try it today at signalwire.com and use code Muppets for $25 in developer credit.
I'm not giving you ad reads in all caps anymore. I think that's supposed to make it easier to read or something. I don't know why they do that with ad reads. But I noticed that they do it at WTKA too. Whenever I'm in the studio and they have a sheet of an ad read, it's always in all caps.
That's very strange. Anyway, the Michigan State defense is not your older brother's Michigan State defense. They don't play quarters, although the Michigan State kind of.
Are you saying they're our younger brother's defense then?
No, we are being eminently respectful here. They play off coverage. They
let people complete short passes. And so you have a very strange statistical effect here where it looks like the Michigan State pass defense can't defend anybody and that they have this massive pass rush. But they've actually faced the second most passes of anyone in the country this year. So when you add that all up, the 26 sacks come out to, I think, 51st in sack rate. And the yards actually come out at 6.1 yards per attempt, which is actually very good. But it is very much a bend but don't break defense, which is going to feel very strange.
Yeah, they don't give up a lot of big plays, kind of the reverse of the offense. And they let you dink and dunk all the way down the field. And then when you get inside the 20, they begin to shut the door. And that's kind of the key. The other key, too, is that we'll get into special teams later, but generally in their games, they've had great field position. So they give up these long drives that don't end in the end zone because they pinned the opponent back to begin with. And once they get inside the 20, the 15, the 10, MSU's done a great job at forcing field goals. They've also forced turnovers. And I think one thing as an overarching take about this defense is that they're well coached and they let the opponent make the mistakes. You watch that Nebraska game, Nebraska made a lot of mistakes all over the game that did them in a game they should have won.
No, Nebraska game, did that? Nebraska, yeah. Of all people, made mistakes? What?
And then, I mean, the Miami game, which I did for the FFFF, was one of the rare games where you see a team lose by 21, and you're like, they probably should have won this game. Like, if not for the five plays that were just disasters. And that was Miami. They turned it over four times, missed a field goal, and they gained 450 yards of offense but scored only 17 points. And that's kind of been the story of MSU's season defensively. They give up 400, 450 yards, but the points aren't there. And they've been disciplined in terms of waiting for the turnover, waiting for the sack, right, just sitting back. And you got to give them credit for that approach. But there's definitely room to move the ball on this defense. Pretty much everybody has. Noah Vedral got 200 passing yards on this defense. So it's just a matter of what can Michigan do when they get inside the red zone, because it's been a problem this season, finishing drives, getting touchdowns, and it's exactly what Michigan State wants to do.
I mean, I predicted this game to be 15-14 with Michigan with five field goals because that's, I mean, they're asking us to play Michigan football, right? Cade McNamara doesn't like to throw downfield, and that's the way that teams have been fighting us, is like bringing their safeties down.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's, he was pretty accurate for a while, and then he was not accurate, and maybe that just averages out to an average-ish quarterback going deep, and then you just have to hope that this is a good day for him. So
yeah, there's not that many attempts downfield is the point. I mean, it's third and five, it's 50-50 that we're running the ball. We do not take a lot of shots downfield. Michigan would much rather just, you know, bend you all the way.
All right, how threatening is Panishuk as a pass rusher in this 700th year he's been on the team?
So I think that Panishuk is pretty good. The game I saw of him for FFFF was not his best of the season. PFF really likes his numbers. He's had a good year statistically, no question. For me, the big question is Drew Beasley going to play tomorrow? We don't know. He has not played in a month. Mel Tucker refuses to comment. But Beasley is a really good player at the other defensive end spot. And if he's not there, they have a few other guys they've rotated, but not Beasley caliber. And so that's the ends. And then they have Jacob Slade on the interior, who's a good pass-rushing defensive tackle, too. So I would say the defensive line is definitely the strength of the defense, led by Panishuk, but you have to watch out for Slade. And if they could get Beasley back, that's a fearsome front four.
So this is an extremely unusual tackle distribution. So four of the top six players are listed as safeties, and then the next two are cornerbacks. So you don't get a defensive lineman until Simeon Barrow, who's got a total of 23 tackles as a freshman defensive tackle. So this has been a good rush defense, but that pattern is just extremely, you just don't see anything like that ever.
You recognize these guys. I mean, they're listing Michael Dowell as a cornerback, which is silly. He's not a cornerback. He's officially the nickelback, but he's a hybrid space player, right? He's a Khalik Hudson linebacker. And then Xavier Henderson has always just been a tackle machine. Like, if Michigan State can funnel to him all the time, like, he is better than Brad Hawkins at that. And he's been doing that for years.
So
I don't know how much credence to put into their rushing defense numbers because they really haven't played anybody who is functional except for Nebraska, and they did a good job against them. Like 50 rushes, 182 yards, but that's 3.6 a pop. That's not getting overwhelmed by a pretty tricky defense offense.
So I put this in the FFFF that the sacks really are a factor when you look at their rush defense, that if you subtract the sacks out, their yards per carry allowed jumps up to nearly 4.5. They have 26 or 27 sacks this year for a negative 150 yards. So the yards per carry numbers in some of these games are encouraging for Michigan. Here's the thing, and this is what Brian was talking about with regards to the secondary doing all the tackling. Nobody runs the ball on these guys. You look at, I went down and listed the run versus pass distribution. There have been games where, I mean, Western Kentucky most notably, because that's an all-pass offense, mm-hmm. that, and Miami, which I did, was the other one, where Miami threw the ball something like 60 times and ran it like 20 sometimes, and their running back ran for 4 yards per carry on MSU, and they gave him 11 carries. So there is no one they've faced this entire season that's going to do what Michigan's going to try to do in terms of establishing the run without, you know, the quarterback threat. Nebraska was the only other roughly analogous one, but you also have Sack spiked in and the Martinez numbers there too. So we're going to learn a lot about Michigan State's run defense. I think there might be room for Michigan to get some push, but we haven't seen anybody try to do to MSU what Michigan is going to try to do tomorrow.
I think it matters a lot if we get Zinter back. At least, I Philly Ogden's fine. I think Barnhart is not on the caliber of the other guys. At least he came out that way in my charting, and you know, it's kind of what Sam was saying on WTK yesterday, too. So if Michigan has somebody who can move Jacob Slade, that undermines basically the entire structure of Michigan State's defense. Now, the Nebraska game you mentioned, they went back to their old quarter stuff for that. I think they've been doing a lot more quarters against Rutgers, too. So I think that the Miami game you watched, Alex, they kind of were going back to that cover three that Mel Tucker installed, because that's what Mel's always been. He's been a cover three guy. But, you know, everyone on this team was recruited to play D'Antonio's quarters. Well,
most except for all the players they got from the transfer portal.
Right, but that's like
the starting defense.
Yeah, but that's the cornerbacks and one of the linebackers, right? Like, and Cal Holliday, I think he's a freshman. But Michael Dowling and Xavier Henderson and Angela Gross were all D'Antonio guys. Those are the safeties that you're talking about who are racking up the tackles. And, you know, if you're going to play a Nebraska who does like a lot of funky things, you know, quarters is the way to go. That quarters was the answer to all of those Rich Rod offenses, right? So I think them going back to that has helped them. I don't think Michigan has faced a team that runs a lot of quarters yet because that does deliver safeties to the line. But we face a lot of teams that do deliver safeties to the line. And that might be the matchup right there because that's a strength on strength. Xavier Henderson versus Blake Corum, they're best, you know, one of the best tacklers in the league versus one of the best tackle breakers in the league.
All right, we should also mention the Michigan State special teams. For the first time in, I think, a month, Michigan is going to play a team that actually has good special teams instead of pathetic ones. So not as much of an advantage. Jaden Reed, of course, has the freebie touchdown against Nebraska, but he also has another touchdown this year on a punt return, and he was very good last year. So and then you've got a couple of good specialists here. They haven't really done much on kickoffs, but this will be a situation where it's much more even than it has been recently.
Yeah, Bryce Berenger is third in the country in average yards per punt entering this week. So him versus Brad Robbins will obviously be one heck of a matchup.
Yeah, that goes back to the whole field position thing that you talk about. Like Michigan State is built to, you know, have Bryce Berenger stick you back on your 15, and then you go for a 60-yard drive, and you're in field goal range.
Well, you know, that's how it's going to be.
In the rain.
All right, do we have some predictions, guys?
I'm sticking by 15-14.
15-14?
Yep.
I will say 27-20 Michigan. I think that Michigan is the better team, but it'll be a close game. You know that MSU is going to have all their weird stuff drawn up. They already do a lot of weird stuff, the flea flicker. They threw a pass to Peyton Thorne 2 weeks ago. It's going to get weird, but I do think Michigan is the better team, and so I'm banking on Bill Connolly here.
I mean, I didn't give a TK prediction with a score, but I did say I felt Michigan should win by approximately the spread. I just don't have any confidence in that because so much of that is like, all right, what are we getting from Cade McNamara in this game? Like, because right. I think that's really the question. If you get Cade McNamara, who's hitting deep shots like he did against Washington and Northern Illinois, then yeah, this is a win. And if you get a couple of other versions of Cade McNamara, well, then I think we're going to see J.J. McCarthy in the second half and Michigan be down. We'll see how that goes. But the overall outcome there should be approximately a win, but I have very little overall faith in that. I do think Michigan should be better on the ground, and that should be decisive if the quarterback play is at all comparable. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about something else.
Northwestern.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom-printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit prentice4m.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGoBlog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E, lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back to Hamgo Radio 7.7. Now is the time on Sprockets when we find out what we learned in the UFR process against Northwestern, a 33-7 victory in which Michigan crushed the opposition on the ground and had struggles in the quarterbacking realm. What I mean,
yeah.
After watching that, like, did your opinion of McNamara's performance change?
A little. I feel a little bit better. I mean, he has a 59% downfield success rating, which was really no different than his Nebraska game. It was just the dead-on things weren't there. He didn't hit his shots downfield. There were just a couple really bad inaccuracies. The downfield stuff is what really gets, like, that's what really upsets me, because it's like, oh no, this is a regression. And we've had quarterbacks under Harbaugh who've regressed before, and it's like, no. But he, you know, underneath, he's fine. There are a lot of plays that I think we just kind of forgot because it's third and six or second and five, and, you know, they spread him out, and he throws to the right guy, and the right guy catches it, and we move on with our lives, and moving on is like some great Haskins play or some great Corum play afterwards. So it just kind of, there were 100 plays on offense, so like they just kind of run together.
For the record, what were your grades for Haskin and Corum?
Oh, good. Let me pull this up again. I was over up at the quarterbacks again. But it was another ridiculous. Where are we? The backs. Haskins, 21, plus 21.5, minus 3 for plus 18.5, which is up in Brandon Graham territory. And Blake Corum, actually, a little bit below that, plus 19, minus 1 for a plus 18. So
I mean, I think it's clear that you are grading backs differently than I.
No, do. No. But, I mean, what do you do on a, like, I showed how I was grading them. Like, I actually, like, pulled out, like, three Corum plays, and I'm like, this is a plus one. This is a plus two. This is a plus three. And the plus three is, like, they deliver a safety to him at the line of scrimmage. He makes that guy miss. Then another safety shows up 5 yards downfield. That guy misses. Then, there's six guys at the goal line, and he's, like, pushing through them to, like, set up, you know, first and goal on the two instead of the five, which is a big deal for Michigan's offense this year for some reason.
So you mentioned that you thought Barnhart was a step back from the other guards, but that Filiango was all right.
Yeah, Filiango actually graded out better than anybody, and they were running behind him a lot. He had a plus 10.5, minus 2.5. I did not think he was responsible for the blindside block. I thought that was to a guy's chest. And that was really the only, like, negative play that he caused.
There was the sack that we talked about.
The sack is the other, yeah. So, but that goes into, I was in the running game. Actually, no, that was passing. Both of them were passing game. Yeah, but the sack, I totally see where you're coming from. I also understand that, like, technically it's the quarterback's fault, but, you know, in a game situation, you're not going to be a good team if you don't have, like, a spidey sense of, oh, this guy's going this way, there's probably somebody coming. I mean, I've gotten confirmation since then that it was the quarterback's read because Sam had Devin Gardner on there.
I completely understand that, but what I'm also saying is that there need to be some hard and fast rules in your mind about what you're doing when you're doing pass blocking, and when the guy leaves your area, you got to expect someone else is coming.
Right. But we are talking about the second sack Michigan's taken all season.
Sure. Yeah. Fair.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's the thing. We're picking away at things, but you have to admit this is a good offense. Eric All is the star we're now talking about. By the way, plus 20.5 minus 2 for plus 18.5. He was right there with the running backs as far as effectiveness. And when I question myself, I'm like, do I really need to keep on giving him plus 1 every time he, like, kicks somebody out when he crosses? And then I watched on defense, and Ojabo is, like, destroying that same block, and it ruins the play. And it's like, and I saw several times where it's like, okay, that's not a plus. It's correct. He is a major, major part of this offense. Much more so than the other two tight ends who kind of make those blocks 50-50. And between all of those two running backs and then the linemen are just usually not screwing up, it's a very good offense. I don't know how to, at least against Northwestern. And it's like, it doesn't feel like it. It just doesn't feel like a great offense because they get to the end of the half and they've only got, you know, a few points to show for it because they're not cashing in the red zone when they get cute.
Yeah. So I imagine that you didn't like it when they got cute.
So this was the second time this season that we had, like, one of those all-time RPS negatives. And RPS, that's the rock, paper, scissors. That's, like, when the coaches are guessing at things. I thought I had a good explanation for it, which is, other than just Michigan was not really preparing for Northwestern during the bye week, I think that Northwestern changed up their tendency. They've been a team, and I'm sure you saw this, Alex, when you're watching State. They used to give up a lot on the edge. And I think that Northwestern really focused on not giving up anything on the edge. So Michigan just said, okay, we're not going off the edge. But it took them a while to get there. But there were a lot of plays where they kind of doubled a guy on the inside. It looked like split action, but they weren't running behind the split zone. They were running on the front side of that thing and trying to go downhill, and they'd get up and do it again. They got them on tempo a few times by putting all the receivers on one side, because I think teams that they've been facing, especially Northwestern, are focused on where they put the tight ends. And they figure wherever the tight ends go, that's where the run's going to go, because that's where Michigan's been running this year. And so you leave the tight ends all on one side and just run behind your offensive line on the other side, and it works.
All right, other side of the ball, is there anything that we can take out of a game against the Northwestern Wildcats from a defensive perspective?
How much do you want to talk about DJ Turner right before the Michigan State game? I mean, that was...
Talk about DJ Turner.
If there was one thing in the world that I would wish for before the Michigan State game, it'd be like some cornerback, not one of the cornerbacks we've seen, coming up and having like an incredible game. And I mean, plus 10.5, it was and very few opportunities. Like, Michigan was holding the ball all games. Northwestern had like very short drives, three and out, three and out, three and out, the one touchdown, three and out, four and out, interception. Every single time they threw at him, and I think that they were planning on throwing at him a lot, he was there. Now, he was not going against their best receiver. He wasn't going against one of the two guys that we identified as dudes. But everyone else was really covered. And then the defensive line just destroyed him, absolutely destroyed him. So, again, bad offensive line, really great performance by the defensive line. I don't know what you want to take away from that, but, I mean, they looked as good as you could hope them to, except for a couple mistakes made by Colson and Moten, of all people.
Yeah, the long touchdown where Moten like seeks out contact on, like, just a very bizarre play from a safety, which we haven't really seen the likes of this year.
Yeah, I said that he was possessed by the spirit of Ryan Mundy, because that's the only thing I could really...
He got drafted. Holding on
after going to West Virginia. I mean, he was good at West Virginia. He just, you remember, there were some inexplicable things that used to happen in Michigan secondary, but that was weird. And then like the 1/3 and 16 screen where everybody forgot to set the edge, and there was another Dax Hill play where he forgot to set the edge. So it was just Michigan kind of playing sloppy, or Michigan like trying to make a play. I think that these guys, you know, they realized they were outmatched and they could take some risks, and they were kind of right. You know, they made a couple of mistakes, and then they got them out the field the next drive. So other than the touchdown, nobody's mistake really cost them anything. Literally, they only scored 7 points.
That is correct. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk some hockey.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, the video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy. His name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, "Yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it."
I also like I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGO Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome back to Emigo Radio 7.7. Michigan is in the midst of a hockey weekend against Wisconsin, so we thought we'd bring in Dave Nasternak. How are you doing, Dave?
Oh, I thought you wanted to talk about Cade McNamara. I had all my Cade notes.
We already did that. We do that before we talk to you.
Oh, I don't get... All right. So you want to talk hockey?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I want to know what happened against Western, because like, I don't get to watch these games. I have to listen to them on the radio except for last night's.
Well, Western might be good. So one of the things about
I heard you guys mocked Alex for saying that they were going to be good.
Western?
What is that?
No.
I apologize, Alex. I apologize.
Okay, that's better.
Because, you know, there is a big difference in the ability of the opposition to really shut down Michigan's rush between Wisconsin and Rush. Michigan could skate with Michigan. They were very disciplined. They made it very difficult for Michigan to find good looks. And Michigan probably should have scored two or three goals in the first period against Wisconsin last night and just didn't quite manage it, put up something like 18 shots. So big difference. And it actually, if you we're always looking for evidence that this team is actually pretty good early in the season after last year's kind of like stop and go kind of stuff. But you look at the teams that Michigan's played, like Lake State just got done sweeping Union. BGSU's 2-0-2 against some decent teams. Like, Wisconsin's 2-5 and might be the worst team they've played so far. So,
I mean, they probably can beat Lake State, my guess is, but they've also lost a ton. And so you talked about last night. I mean, that Jared Moe was the only reason that it wasn't a blowout. I mean, he was very evident in that first period, but it carried throughout the game, and he made a number of, like, really, really nice saves. I didn't think that Michigan got, like, a ton of chances down by the crease, but I think I had them at like 23 in the house, which is a lot. But they also gave up that number. And that was the thing that worried me a little bit was, all right, I don't see a whole ton of talent on this Wisconsin team. Alex, you can, if you did, maybe you saw it, but I was a little nervous because I was like, should they be giving up that many really good chances to, a Wisconsin team that just doesn't have a lot of offense?
You know, the way Michigan was playing that game, you expect to finish more of your chances, right? It's kind of that, we'll get 12 A-plus chances. You'll get 6 A-plus chances, but we've got better scorers and an equivalent goalie. Most of the time, you win that sort of game. I was frustrated by Jake Kerenin's performance last night because if you put him in the lineup, the one thing he's supposed to do is stop giving up odd man rushes, right? Like, you don't put that guy in the lineup for offense, and he was out there for 3 odd man rushes against. One that he turned over at the blue line, one where he went way down in the offensive zone corner and turns it over, and another where he loses a guy behind him. Like,
okay, if, but to some extent, this is who they are.
Like, well, no, I'm saying...
The turnover at the blue line is obviously very bad, but...
He's talking like a third-pairing defense.
Well, but, I mean, they're up 2-0 in the early third period, and they gave up an odd man rush, and I think that was like either Power or Blankenberg getting real deep in the zone. And, you know, to me, I'm like, all right, this is, you're up 2-0 in the third. You got to stop doing this, and they just don't. So they are playing with incredibly active defensemen. I think everybody from the top to the bottom of the roster is playing like this. So
Yeah, I agree with that. I defend that point quite a bit in conversations with David in that this is the way they want to play. My point is that if Jake Kerenin's going to be giving up those chances too, put Ethan Edwards in, right? Like, put in someone who at least can give you a little bit more offensive punch. But otherwise, Eric Portillo was great last night. And one thing I want to point out with Western, this is a stat I wish I had known last week. I didn't realize this till last night when I was reading the College Hockey News. Western is the heaviest team in the NCAA by almost 4 pounds at 196.3, narrowly, you know, above Wisconsin, which is number 2, and then Minnesota. So these are big physical teams that Michigan is playing. But Western in particular, you watched that in those games last weekend, they were finishing every check at every opportunity. Yeah. Every chance they could get to knock Michigan down, they were taking it. And I think that's good for this team. I think it's good to encounter that kind of opponent and learn how to adjust to it.
Well, also, I mean, they were able to skate with Michigan. And if you look at that Western team, they have Dylan Wendt, who used to be a Michigan commit. They have Austin Swankler, who used to be a Michigan commit and scored a point per game in the OHL. And then they have Wyatt Shingothi. I don't know how to pronounce his name. But he was a big recruit, too. So these are guys who... They're not like grabbing NAHL guys, right? They're grabbing the second tier guys and they're holding on to them for a long time. And they lost a lot, but I think that's a team that's got a lot of talent.
Now, yeah. They're really well coached too, I thought. Yeah. In addition to going into Kalamazoo, that's an intimidating arena Michigan has not played well in. So to get a win there, or 55% of a win for pairwise purposes, was pretty good. Not to mention that second game, I mean, Lord almighty, that ice was a disgrace.
Yeah. I mean,
the players,
I don't think you should be calling it ice, Alex. That's not ice.
You guys mentioned that on the podcast, and I stopped listening and called my brother. My brother went to Western Michigan, the younger brother, and the only sport he actually cares about is Broncos hockey. Like, football does nothing. Like, hockey's the only thing that goes on there. And so I told him, like, hey, man, they're making fun of your ice. He's like, yeah, I guess you guys are a fast team, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, whenever he had a fast team, even the 90s, they would, like, soak the ice and, like, and make it,
that's
like, into sludge.
That's what I said. I was like, they're cutting it like a long infield.
Yep. He goes, yep, that's what we do.
I didn't think it was... I was half kidding.
Well, I mean,
maybe it's how it works.
Western's not a slow team, I don't think. They didn't sound slow. I'm sorry. I had to hear it on the radio. But, like, I don't think that they were getting, outskated by Michigan in the first game, were they?
No, I didn't think so. I don't think they were as skilled as Michigan, but they could skate with Michigan. So I fully think Western will be a tournament team, or at least very close to it. I think they're a good squad. Wisconsin, I don't think is. I mean, they got blasted by Tech, blasted by St. Cloud. Like, this is not a tournament team.
Yeah, I was talking with Craig, and he was looking up stuff. And this is still real early, but RPI goes 1 Western, 2 Michigan, 3 St. Cloud, 4 Minnesota to Duluth, and 5 Minnesota State.
True, so, which is all Michigan or Michigan opponents, basically.
Yeah, St. Cloud is the only team that Michigan hasn't played, and they're coming off a sweep of – no, actually, Duluth's coming off a sweep of Minnesota. So some early indications that Michigan is well-positioned, and they'll – have to follow that up tonight with one of the teams on the schedule that is least intimidating, except, I mean, I guess you could say other than the revamped GLI, this might be the easiest game of the year for Michigan, a home game against Wisconsin.
Well, and last year they struggled on, like, finishing sweeps. And that's sort of like what I wrote about last night, was like, okay, that was really great. You know, they played really well and did a lot of the things you're supposed to do. But like, you want to be a top five team, you want to be a national title contender, then blow them out the second night. Or find a way to dominate the game anyway and hope the puck goes in, whatever. But that was something that, like, State got them last year, Ohio State got them last year, Wisconsin got them last year on the second half of these series, that Michigan could have, like, drastically changed, like, their place in the standings by finishing those sweeps. And so now this is a perfect chance against a team that's going to be overwhelmed, that they just took to pieces last night. And honestly, like, they got as good a performance from Mo as you can really expect. And so is he going to be able to duplicate that tonight? I mean, because if he doesn't, Michigan should have many goals.
Yes. I should issue a correction, though.
You should?
The GLI is actually Tech and then Western again. I was thinking about the Niagara series.
Yeah. Yeah, the Niagara series will be a slaughter. I do want to shout out one thing for this weekend. Starting tonight, Notre Dame plays Minnesota, which will be informative for learning more about the other Big Ten foes. Also, Penn State is playing North Dakota in Nashville, Tennessee, in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame Classic. So we're going to get to learn a little bit about the other Big Ten teams this weekend. In particular, when you look at Minnesota, a friend of the pod, Nate Wells, has kind of talked about Minnesota, and there's some panicking going on, you could say, in Gopherland right now after they were pretty uncompetitive against Duluth and kind of struggled against Mercyhurst. So we'll see. We're going to learn a lot about the Big Ten this weekend.
And I think that game is post-Michigan game tonight. I think it's at like 9 on BTN.
Yeah, where, the Minnesota.
So you will not have weird camera swings, as we talk about on BTN Plus. And then when did you say the Dakota game is?
I'm not sure exactly on the time. I think it's actually tomorrow night.
It's
not
tomorrow
tonight.
Night.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't been following hockey as much, especially in the off season. Is it weird that everybody's got each other's goalies now? Like, I remember Mo on Minnesota. LaFontaine is there. Is like, you know, is this supposed to be happening? Is this like, do the goalies switch every year? Is that like how we do things now in the Big Ten to keep things fair?
I mean, well, I think that's going to be the case going forward, is that you're going to have a maximum of one plausible starter per team, and if a guy thinks that he can hack it, he's going to go somewhere else, and you're going to take, you know, the 25, 23 year old goalie over a kid right out of school most of the time. So,
I mean, they're basically quarterbacks for hockey, right? I mean, that's you get one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the transfer portal's opened up so much that it's just free reign now.
Yeah, Michigan already played Josh Grohl, another Western Michigan.
And Portillo came flying out of the corner to make a ridiculous save on him, too. Otherwise, he would have scored against Michigan.
Yeah, and he was a good USHL player, so like that's a team that can skate with some people.
Yeah, and one note, also, right now there is discussion in the NHL about Las Vegas potentially acquiring Jack Eichel. So if that were to happen, Brendan Brisson could be on the move, potentially to join Owen Power in Buffalo if that trade were to fully materialize.
Really?
So just watch out on the horizon about that. I thought Brisson had a really great play last night where he had the hit and the defensive play right before that. He got a penalty, but like, we didn't see him do that at all last year. Like, engage defensively, poke check, lays a thundering hit. He has just grown a lot this season.
He had a nice centering pass, too, from behind the net, if I remember correctly. It went nowhere because no one was in the slot, but he got it there with a guy on him, and I was like, wow, that's someone's there. That's a goal.
All right, so Wisconsin tonight. Michigan goes for the sweep. And soon we will have basketball to also talk about, which will be fun. All right, guys.
All right.
See you.
See you guys.
Boris is a mayor and a land surveyor with plans of his own. He hates Aruska, he hates a vodka, banned it from his home. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka,
vodka,
he never drank a single drop. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka,
vodka,
this poison he swears to stop. He's singing la da 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 da. Boris was visited by demons in his head, and they said, bring me Ruski vodka or your son may soon be dead.
Let him get the lead.
And then you just come back and take it back.
Do you think of Michigan State?
Yep. So that's what they think, so that's what I think. What can I say? If they think that, I'm going to think that. If they think we think that, then yeah, we think that.
So seriously, 7 years ago, you're not
Not at all.